Morning.
So, as many of you know, our practice period here at Berkeley Zen Center is cooking along day by day, week by week. And we are supported in this practice by Sojin Roshi and also particularly by our Shuso, Kogen Yudo John Mogi. And John has set aside this time from his life in the wilds of Oregon to be down here for this practice period, and really sitting very strongly. And this is his, today we have the opportunity to hear his second Saturday lecture. So we look forward to hearing the Dharma.
Morning.
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 Everybody hear me okay back there?
A little up.
A little up. Okay. How's that? Is that good enough? Everybody here?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, sort of preparing for this talk and thinking about it, I all of a sudden had this awareness that this is the end of the fourth week of practice period. And I was really kind of surprised because it seems as if it had just started. And at the same time, it seems as if it's just been going on for a long, long time. And I've been down here not for 4 weeks, but I've been down here for goodness knows whatever, back when I used to live here. And it just feels like this, just this flow along. And one of the things that I really have been appreciating is just how much I kind of feel kind of the support of everyone here, and that we're all flowing along together, holding each other up, and so it's been really a wonderful feeling. And I feel as if there's another a koan with Joshu, and Joshu the newborn does. And Joshua, one of the line is, you know, like tossing a ball into a rapidly flowing river. And I feel that's kind of how this practice period has been going. So thank you all for being here. And I also wanted to sort of add a word of appreciation for Hozan, who's talked last week, and he also presented another koan from Joshua. And and talked, you know, filled in a little bit more about who Joshu was and his practice. And but I also really appreciate his bringing into his talk last week our family style and our practice here in the Suzuki lineage, as it's been passed down to us through Sojin Roshi. And really kind of thinking about that family style in terms of the koan that Sojin's given me, and in terms of Joshu, where Joshu has this approach that's really just sort of based on ordinary words, everyday activities, as how we express the Dharma. Not getting stuck into fancy ideas, intellection, and just this. Just this, what's in front of us, and not sticking to anything. And another little appreciation that really helped me in terms of thinking about what I wanted to talk about today is last week Stan Dewey asked me a question during Shuso Tea, and he said, what's your theme for practice period? And I hadn't thought about it before. And so I thought about it, and I realized that the theme that's really kind of been developing for me through working with this koan and this whole practice period is not difficult, not easy. And it didn't even occur to me when he asked me the question, but that's kind of how I opened my first talk 3 weeks ago, talking about easy and difficult, simple and not. And so I want to use this as kind of the background and maybe the focus of going into this talk about the koan that Sojin has given me to work on in this practice period, which is Joshu, and the real way is not difficult. And so I'm going to start just thinking about this easy and difficult. And when I think about these words, I associate it with, you know, trying to accomplish something, some act, trying to understand something. But there's an idea of accomplishment. There's an idea of something that is being done that is hard to get to, easy to get to. And, you know, I sort of think about, you know, with myself, there's some things that come easily, some things that don't. And so I have this notion in my head, okay, easy and difficult. And I started thinking about, well, what does that mean in terms of the Dharma? What does it mean in terms of our practice? Our practice is not based on gaining anything. It's not based on getting somewhere in particular. So it's really hard to, you know, bring in these concepts of easy and difficult into our practice, our everyday practice. So, you know, these normal notions just don't seem to hold up too well. So, and it brings up the question then, which is, what is the simplicity in our practice and our understanding, and what is difficult? So when I look at myself, I look at my constant kind of thinking, ruminating, planning, trying to be in control of circumstances. And I also see when I'm doing that, my anxiety, my worries, the confusion, you know, that I create, especially when I'm grasping at things, rejecting things, sticking to things. And kind of all the extraneous machinations of my own mind that make the simplest tasks into the most difficult. And it leaves me continually getting tangled up in my own Gordian knot. So when I'm looking at Joshu and this koan, this is sort of where, okay, Joshu is really trying to help us here. He's trying to help us presenting this line from the faith and mind of the third ancestor. The great way is not difficult. It merely abhors picking and choosing, or choice and attachment. And this is an expression of a quotation that Joshu often uses with his monks. It comes up a number of times in the Blue Cliff record. There's three other cases where this comes up. And in reading through the recorded sayings of Joshu, it's referred to in a lot of ways again and again and again. So, at one point, you know, on this, I love this little bit, so I'm going to just sort of quote it. And Joshua was saying to his monks, "As for the Buddha Dharma of this place, I say it's easy. If you say it's easy, rather, it's difficult. If you say it's difficult, it's easy. Where I am, it is easy to see, yet difficult to know about." The third ancestor, also in you know, faith and mind, added this about easy and difficult: the great way is broad, neither easy nor difficult. So, you know, here we are: easy, difficult. Things that we think of as two opposites. And the question, you know, that I sit with in this is, well, what is it that lies beyond this idea of easy and difficult? What is it that's beyond our thinking and our concepts that seem to make what we're presented as being fundamentally not difficult into something that is quite vexing at times. And as I was thinking about this, another part of faith in mind was coming to my mind, and sort of weaving this in, because I really want to sort of weave in you know, the third ancestor's faith in mind into this, because I think it's really kind of helpful in terms of knowing Joshu. Excessive talking and thinking turn you from harmony with the way. Cut off talking and thinking, and there is nowhere you cannot penetrate. And this seems to be what it feels like is Joshu's way. So what I want to do right now is just, you know, go back into the koan to read it with Engo's introduction and Setro's verse, and then start exploring this. Engo's introduction goes this way: the universe is too narrow, the sun, moon, and stars are all at once darkened. Even if blows from the stick fall like raindrops and the katsu shouts sound like thunder, you are still far short of the truth of Buddhism. Even the Buddhas of the three worlds can only nod to themselves, and the patriarchs of all ages do not exhaustively demonstrate its profundity. The whole treasury of sutras is inadequate to expound its deep meaning. Even the clearest-eyed monks fail to save themselves. At this point, how do you conduct yourself? Mentioning the name of Buddha is like trudging through the mire. To utter the word Zen is to cover your face with shame. Not only those who have long practiced Zen, but beginners, too, should exert themselves to attain directly to the secret. I really appreciate the words "how do you conduct yourself." Again, it's kind of like, I think it's a very important feeling that I have about our practice here, our family practice, which is what are you doing? How are you conducting yourself moment by moment? Whether it's walking into the Zendo, whether it's drinking your tea or washing your dishes or just simply walking or meeting each other, how do you conduct yourself? So here's the case. Joshu spoke to the assembly and said, "The real way is not difficult. It only abhors choice and attachment." Joshu then adds his own statement to the quotation of the third ancestor. With but a single word, there may arise choice and attachment, or there may arise clarity. This old monk does not have that clarity. Do you appreciate the meaning of this or not? So we're kind of thrown with this question. And Joshu is really pointing out that you just can't sort of say, okay, the great way is not difficult. You know, what happens when you do something or say something? You can either have, you know, choice and attachment, confusion, delusion arising, or clarity, enlightened activity. And then Joshu comes and says, this monk doesn't have that clarity. This old monk doesn't have it. Other ways it's translated off as doesn't abide in or is not within. So this monk is not stuck in clarity. Joshu is someone that you don't pin down. He's not sticking to any particular thing. He's not sticking to enlightenment, and he's not sticking to delusion. So do you appreciate this meaning or not? That's the question he throws to his monks. And one of the things I mentioned last time when I talked is that Joshu really puts emphasis on really getting stuck with a question and not getting off into analysis, trying to figure it out. So in the koan, a monk gets up and asks, if you do not have that clarity, what do you appreciate? It's like he's trying to kind of catch Joshu perhaps, or maybe he was just confused. But Joshu just replies, I do not know that either. Just leaving it, but it's like, you know, we're not going there. I don't know. And it's a kind of a not knowing that Joshu is expressing here, which is not the not knowing of ignorance. Like, oh, gee, I have no idea. That's interesting, yeah. Never thought about it. But more than not knowing that is most intimate. The not knowing that's not about thinking and working out, or not being able to think and work out. It's not based on ignorance and just plain stupidity. But a deeper not knowing, which is when presented with kind of the way things work, that you can't really wrap your head around it, you can't give it an explanation, and you can't really kind of formulate it. So as Engo talked about in his introduction, you know, all the sutras, the expounding by all the ancestors, you know, presenting and can't completely get it. It's there's something more, something vaster. So in this case, then the monk, after Joshu said, I don't know that either, the monk said, well, if you don't know, how can you say you do not have that clarity? You know, again, kind of just this kind of pushing at the same kind of, you know, approach, thinking. Maybe he's trying to, you know, catch Joshu, measure himself up against Joshu. And Joshu just simply replies, as he usually does, fairly simply, asking a question is good enough. Now, make your bows and retire. And again, so this asking the question is good enough. Joshu can't answer it for him. Joshu can't get him anywhere. That's what the monk has to do. He has to stay with his question and just be with it. You know, you ask the question, work on it. That's your question. So the monk, in a way, seems as if he's trying to pin down Joshu and use his own words to catch him. He probably didn't understand Joshu's not knowing, but maybe he did. He was just trying to be clever. But I, as I was sort of thinking about this, I really, you know, is developing a fondness for this monk and an appreciation. And what first, you know, struck me when I, after I just sort of got off the, kind of this initial thing, well, you know, the monk just wasn't getting it, you know. And that was kind of not great. But I realized this monk got up there. I mean, Joshu was not some sort of, you know, minor character in our history. It's one of the major Zen masters of the Tang Dynasty. And this monk had the courage to get up there and to question Joshu, and in some ways to try to lock horns with Joshu. And that took a lot. And I think about myself, well, do I have that kind of courage to get up in a situation like that? And so I really developed appreciation for this monk, really kind of putting it out there, just getting up there and exposing himself completely. And in doing that, he's given us all a gift over the over 1,000 years since this interchange took place. In some ways, if Joshua just got up and said what he said, you know, the great way is not difficult. It only abhors, you know, choice and attachment. You know, when word comes up, you either choice and attachment, or it could be clarity. This old monk doesn't have that clarity. And do you understand that? And nothing else happened. You know, we wouldn't have, I think, the richness and depth that we have in this dialogue. So I feel a great appreciation for the monk getting up, exposing himself to everyone, and just saying what he said. And and that really allowed me to see another way in which Joshu, just in a very simple way, can get, and let's say cut off, but deflate this thinking mind, this discursive thinking that the monk was bringing forth. And essentially, it's saying to the monk, you know, what I was getting at, the meaning of what I said, is not something that you can just sort of analyze this. It's something more. And one of the things that came to mind is as reading this case again and again, are the words in the Jewel Mirrored Samadhi, that the meaning does not reside in words, but a pivotal moment brings it forth. And it feels like that's a real important thing in looking at Joshu, is that you're just not going to get what he's talking about by trying to figure the words out. I mean, some of his, you know, responses would be, as far as asking about things like, you know, the cypress tree in the courtyard, something like that. You can't wrap your head around it. You can't, there's some mysterious meaning in this, you know, some symbol that I can get at. So he just uses these simple words, you know, and again pointing out that the meaning does not reside in the words. There's something deeper, more vast, beyond the who is Joshu? What is this right now, right here? And calling us to look at this in our daily life, every day, what we're doing. So right now I'd like to talk about, go through Secho's verse, because I really like it. I like it a lot more than I liked Ingo's introduction, to be honest with you. And it catches a really nice flavor that I think. So Secho's verse, the real way is not difficult. Direct word, direct speech. And this is really kind of Joshu's specialty, direct word, direct speech. Not talking about things, but pointing to something. One with many phases, two with one. And this is not one, not two. Form, emptiness. Far away in the heavens, the sun rises, the moon sets. Beyond the hills, the high mountains, the cold waters. And as I was reading Secho's verse in this, another line from the Chulamir Samadhi came to mind. I used to love it when we used to do it on Saturday. Yeah, they would on Saturdays do the Chulamir Samadhi in our service. Whether practices and approaches are mastered or not, reality constantly flows. Out there is just continually, it's out there, even if you don't realize it. The skull has no consciousness, no delight. The dead tree sings in the wind, not yet rotten. And the dead tree sings in the wind, not yet rotten. Other ways that it's translated, which hook up with some other references, is the dragon murmurs. The dead tree, dragon murmurs are not yet exhausted. And there was a question a monk asked Kyogen once. He said, "What is the way?" And Kyogen responded, "In the dead tree, dragon murmurings." And Sozan wrote a verse on this. "In the dead tree, the dragon murmurs and truly sees the path. When the skull has no consciousness, only then are the eyes clear. When joy and consciousness come to an end, all happenings are ended. How can such a one discriminate the pure in the midst of impurity?" And Dogen, in a Fascicle Dragon song, also speaks about this dead tree and the dragon murmuring, and but he talks about it in a wonderful kind of way, as he often turns things talks about, even though the tree is, you know, seems withered and dead, like in winter, in the spring buds begin to form, new life comes through. And, you know, that feeling of, like, you know, think about again, like a dead tree, it's like, well, okay, it's all finished, but Dogen really turns it around. No, it's just part of this continuous life, that you just can't extract, you know, life from death, birth from death. So each year, what seems like a dead tree comes back to life. So Secho finishes his verse with, "Difficult, difficult. Attachment and clarity. Watch and penetrate the secret." And again, this is, again, I feel like, you know, Joshua's real thing, just penetrate the secret beyond words. Don't get stuck in your own tangles. Find the way through. So coming back to the beginning we started with here is, how do we make what seems difficult not difficult? And as Soja's been talking about in our Thursday evening class, about, you know, Zazen and letting go, come back to letting go moment by moment, and then just falling through space and time. The way in the autumn and autumn breezes, leaves are just fluttering down and just blowing in the wind. Just not difficult, but it's also not easy. So I would like to just sort of end at this point and open things up for comments and questions. Thank you. Sojin, do you want to? You want to say something?
Well, if you ask me, I'm not thinking.
Would you like to say something? Would you please say something?
Okay. What keeps Joshua from getting stuck?
He's not carrying around any baggage. He's not looking for anything.
What does he think about the absolute and the relative?
I don't think he thinks about it.
If he does think about it, what does he do?
Just let go.
Thank you, John. I wonder, to me it seems like an enormous effort that Shusos go through to sit in that front, that head student seat for 6 weeks. And does this, do you use this koan to help get you through or let go of getting through? Or how do you, how do you work with it when you're sitting?
Actually, when I'm sitting, I'm not working with it. And what gets me through the 6 weeks is everybody here. It's an extraordinary feeling. In order, because I think so much, I really have to, you know, just sort of focus on just letting go, and in a way, that's how, by practicing letting go, that I can begin to kind of get a sense. Russ?
Thank you, Shusho. We pick and we choose, and within that, is there a great way?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you just spoke about without picking and choosing. So the great way is not difficult as long as we don't pick and choose.
But there's picking and choosing, or choice and attachment, where you get stuck to it. And sometimes, like I said, you know, 3 weeks ago, you know, the quotation from Yogi, you get to a fork in the road, you take it. And it's, you know, that's the kind of picking and choosing that's easy, that is, because it's not really picking and choosing. Mm-hmm. It's just you do it.
Thank you.
Ben?
You said, you quoted the meaning is not in the words. That reminded me of another kind of well-known Zen passage where the guy says, my talking to you like this is like gouging a wound in healthy flesh. And with those advices in mind, how do you regard the activity of giving a lecture?
You know, it requires a lot of thinking and organizing, and
organizing.
Well, yeah, putting together kind of is that, it's we talk about again and again. You know, it's a pat phrase, but you know, making a mistake on purpose. But you know, sometimes this you got to do this, and. I don't know, because I don't think I'm particularly good at it. Yeah, because it's a... how do I pick and choose words? And what... just this continual, just sort of having to let go, having to let go. You know, you have to get up and you have to say something. And either picking and choosing can arise or clarity. And it's usually a mix.
Thank you, Shuso. I wanted to do something. Dead tree. Dragon murmuring.
Okay.
When you're thinking, mind. When you let go, mind. What mind?
No mind.
How do you know?
I don't. I have no idea. When I let go, there's nothing there.
Joshu seems to be a pretty balanced individual, a centered individual. And how does balance relate to letting go? Or how does centeredness relate to letting go?
In a way, balance is something that you only have when you let go.
John, thank you very much for your talk. I really appreciate your sincerity and your sweetness. So Joshu says, the question is enough. So I wonder, over the course of the practice period, as you've worked with this koan, how your relationship to the question has changed and how you understand it has changed. You might start by articulating what the question is.
I'm not sure how to answer. The actual form of the question is less and less the question. The question is, what is the question? So in working with it, it's like starting off with, okay, these are the words. What is that question? And then coming to where it could have been any question. What is the question? What is your, you know? So that's the question left with is question.
So what do you get your teeth into then? If there's no particular question that's alive.
It's not the teeth, it's just like it just sits here.
What's it? What's it?
Yeah, what's it? What is it? It sits right in here, the question. And there's no answer. Stan?
So you quoted part of what Joshi said. He said, to know is difficult. I believe that's one of the things that you said. You said, such as that, and to know is difficult. And so that implies to me that you can know, but it's difficult. So, what is knowing?
I think what Joseph's talking about, you know, that it's difficult to know about the Dharma. Just direct experience. What is it? It's not knowledge. It's just a deep experience. This is what it is.
It seems to me that the, when he says, I don't know, it opens everything up. That, like, it's an opening to every possibility.
It's not a matter of knowing and not knowing. As Nansen said to him, it's beyond knowing and not knowing.
But then he says to know is difficult, which is saying
to know about it, talking about, you know, the Dharma of this place. To know about it is difficult.